This is an Enterprise Times podcast sponsored by Unit 4. My name is Steve Brooks, and today I'm talking to Dmitry Krakowski, Chief Product Officer at Unit 4. Dmitry recently joined Unit 4 and is in charge of the ERPX launch in a few weeks. We're going to discuss what brought him to Unit 4 and how he hopes to shape ERPX. Hi, Dmitry. Can you share a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Steve. How are you? I just joined Unit 4. I spent 4 years before that at Google, working in Google Cloud Platform, and approximately 7 years before that working at a company called SuccessFactors, now SAP SuccessFactors, as head of products there. And very excited to be talking to you today.
It's a very exciting time in the industry at the moment. There's lots of fascinating companies doing some amazing things. You've been working on ERPX for a few months as a consultant. Why did you decide to join Unit 4 and why now?
That's an interesting question. I think the main reason is this. There are sort of natural breaks in the industry and when new technologies evolve. If you look at software as a service, the first group of players, whether it's SuccessFactors or Salesforce.com or Workday at the time, started approximately 20 years ago. And things changed quite a bit in the last 20 years. As I started working with Unit 4, I saw the opportunity to do something very different. When I look at things like this, I really think about market opportunity, company's position in this evolving market, the team that's driving this, and finally, my fit into this team. All these factors at Unit 4 were just perfect. I felt like here's an opportunity to take the advantage of this really gigantic technological shift that's happening in the world. Public clouds, machine learning, the rise of microservices, APIs, mobile, different approach to user experiences, and to rethink and reimagine the ERP systems for the future. I think the next generation of these systems is starting now. I think Unit 4 is in a great position to do this, and I'm excited to be a part of the team that's going to go after this.
The ERPX is obviously that next generation ERP you're talking about. That was announced last year. I think it's going to be launched in a few weeks. Can you tell us briefly about it and why you think it is the next generation?
As I said, technologically it takes advantage of really major breakthroughs that happened broadly in the last 5 years. And so rebuilding it for the future is very exciting. So what are we trying to do with this? There are a few things, but the most important thing is you want to evolve them the world of delivering customers, essentially the toolboxes that they have to then configure to fit their needs, to the system that fits their needs out the box. We deliver products that are right for particular industries, for professional services, for nonprofits, for public sector, for higher education, and reflects the way they work, the workflows, the setup of the system, the user experiences that reflect how people in the organization perform their daily work. All of this is done, configured out the box for them to use. And last but not least, it's a system that's not static. One of the problems with ERPs of the past was that it takes a long project, a big effort to make them right for you the first time. But then companies change. We live in the world of changing economies, COVID, remote work, increased competition. So systems like this need to adopt and change with the needs of the company. So what was okay and good and right 5 years ago is not right for you now. And so ability to be adaptable and changeable and resilient and evolve with the customer is something that is enabled by technology. In this case, things like APIs and microservices and cloud technologies that our system is based on.
I'm glad you mentioned that at the end, because previous to that, it sounded like what a lot of other ERP vendors are saying. And ERPX has that fundamental architecture of microservices, and I assume that's the major technical breakthrough that you're talking about. Are there any others that ERPX specifically is taking advantage of from the last 5 years?
There are a few other things, things like machine learning technology. As I said, I spent the last 4 years at Google working in machine learning AI, thinking about how to apply this to the broad automation of services in the enterprise world. This is something we're doing here. We're looking at the overall workflows and what people do and what of this can be done automatically instead of having users look, for instance, in one of the examples at the invoice and copy fields from the invoice into the application, ability to automatically recognize all the fields in the invoice by using a trained machine learning model automatically map this to the right accounts, again, based on the previous transactions, so that instead of people having to do this, the system is smart enough to do it well and itself. That's one of the additional technologies. Another technological breakthrough I think we've achieved by using this what's called low-code, no-code extension and integration kits. And the idea is very simple. The enterprise applications need to be connected together. ERP is often at the center of this world, but ERP may be only 25% of the overall footprint of the applications the customers might have. You might have a CRM system to drive your sales. You might have an ERP, financials, or procurement, or travel and expense, or HR, or your collaboration systems like Teams or Slack. You might have your analytics systems, and all these things need to fit together. And fitting them together, connecting them together, has always been a challenging problem. Companies are a little bit different. Their setups are a little bit different. So all of this required in the past an army of consultants that come in and evaluate what you have and connect these things together. And usually the way they approach that is they have to write essentially code. The programmers who had to write the code to connect the applications together. The tool that we build allows people who are not necessarily programmers to do the same thing. That's why it's called low code, no code, which means that by using drag and drop tools or UIs to express what application you want to connect with, what application and what context, and what do you want to happen when something happened in CRM, and how you want this data to flow, for instance, into financials, for say customer information or order information. We could do this a lot faster, a lot cheaper, and without writing code. And then it works automatically. This really changes the economics of how these things fit together. We talk about this notion of enterprise mesh, ability to connect all the systems within the enterprise, whether it's our systems or other applications the customers might use, together in the seamless workflows that flow across the applications, and they're delivered at the fraction of cost that was typically the case in the past.
One of the things I found when I was researching you, when I saw the announcement you were joining here for, is the fact that not only, as you mentioned, you work for SuccessFactors, which is a people company in terms of HCM, but you also worked at Intuit early in your career, which is a finance operation. Unit 4 seems to combine that, and I'm just wondering if you see that convergence of people and finance is important today.
Yes, absolutely. And this was one of the major reasons that I wanted to be a part of this opportunity. What I often see is processes break when they're contained in the silos. When you talk about HR processes, I've dealt with this quite a bit within the SuccessFactors, they're often rolled out sort of by HR people and with an HR-centric view of the world. But when you talk to the people who run the business, they want to connect what happens with HR with what happens in the business. They need to understand not just sort of your performance score, but how you contributed to the business, how you improve the business performance, how you improve the economics, how you improve the margins, revenue, whatever the right metrics might be. I always felt that there are great opportunities on the intersection of connecting these different processes together. Traditionally, a lot of these systems evolved separately in individual silos. HR systems dealt with HR issues, finance system dealt with finance issues, project systems dealt with project issues. And the attraction of this opportunity to me is connecting them together seamlessly, making sure that as we roll out one of them, that we connect them with everything else in the organization.
You talked about the connection between finance and HCM, but with people now working remotely and disconnected from each other, how does that change the importance of ERPX, and how do you see it helping organizations into the future?
I think that's a great example of where you need the system to be much more flexible than was the case before. Again, the nature of the work has changed quite a bit. So if you look at the consultants that would travel Monday through Thursday and would be on site helping the customers implement their projects, and they would work all together. Now these consultants are separately, they're working from home, they need to connect using remote means. When you think about, for instance, performance management process or pay for performance types of processes, they need to now look at the completely different data to evaluate this performance. It's no longer teams sitting together and being able to observe each other. You need to look at different kinds of signals. You need to understand who contributed and what. and how they contributed to these different projects. So organizing performance management around this remote workforce, remote projects that happen with people distributed all over the world is quite different from how it would be in the traditional world of performance reviews. So that's what we're so excited about what we've built is it's not just we can make it work for you first time. It's as when the world changes, for instance, in this case, evolve to the remote world, we're able to, when the project ends, to automatically kick off, for instance, a quick continuous performance review where we take the feedback or take 360 feedback from everybody who participated in the project, from potentially customers, and bring it all together into this different new style remote-oriented performance measurement process. This is one of the examples. The kinds of things we could do with this really, really flexible system that we're not able to do before.
Dimitri, what's actually happening around the launch? Have you got customers in place? Are we going to expect it there and ready to roll out?
I mentioned we announced that we will launch the ARPX in March at our event that happened in October. And I'm happy to report we already have 10 customers that sign up for this, and we're working very closely with them in terms of starting the implementations. It's going really great.
And those customers across the different industry sectors, aren't they? Because I think AmeriCares is one of them.
That's right. AmeriCares is one of them. Very, very excited about the company, about what they do, and the fact that they trusted us with this. But generally speaking, yes, customers across different industries and in different countries as well. So it's pretty broad representation of our customer base. And I think bodes well for our future because it seems like it's a fit for different industries and for different countries based on the early signals, still very early signals that we're getting.
There's part of that embedding the machine learning into what Klaus Jepsen, when I spoke to him last, talked about 10-second experiences. That's the new type of user experience with an ERPX. But how do you see that UX developing within the application?
The big fundamental principle of what we're trying to achieve is this. We want to build special, different experiences for different people. The time of one-size-fits-all experience, we think, is in the past. If you look at the systems and how they evolved, typically they would be form-based, and as a user, you would see a form with many, many different fields on it. And often, most of these fields did not relate to necessarily what you did in the moment. You know, you had to fill out a couple of fields, but because the systems were rigid and static, they would display a whole bunch of these different fields to you. And this was a big turnoff for the casual users. Professional users who use the system every day, however many hours a day, become used to this complexity. They develop essentially a muscle memory. They know how to go from field to field, and they know different tab sequences. They're generally okay with complexity as long as it was efficient. Casual user, occasional users, such as consultants on the road or maybe CFOs who don't necessarily live in the system every day, were turned off by this complexity. So what we're trying to achieve with this is creating different experiences for different users based on who they are, based on where they are, based on the kind of workflows they need to participate in. Some examples that Klaus, I'm sure, talked to you about were this sort of 10-second experiences where essentially we have now technology that allows you to create this little mini apps, instant apps, we call them, on the fly. We may only need to ask for one field from you. So instead of presenting you a big form with 20 fields where most of them are grayed out, we actually don't need your input, we just pop a tiny little thing that says, hey, Dimitri, input this field right here. Maybe it's a missing invoice number, something that machine learning couldn't recognize because it was handwritten in bad handwriting. These tiny little experiences we present to you, you input this one little piece of information, and off you go, and the system can proceed. So that's one example of the new kinds of UIs we're doing. Another one is this notion of digital assistant, that sometimes when we need to get a question answered by you, we essentially create an experience where the system reaches out to you and reaches out to you through applications you already use. For instance, Slack on Microsoft Teams. Through Microsoft Teams or through Slack, we may ask you a question and say, Steve, we need this piece of information for you. Would you mind inputting it here? You input this and off you go, and the system continues on as well. So instead of bringing you to the system, having you log in, having you navigate through various tiers and layers of the application just to the right place, we skip all of this. We just send the question right to you, you answer it, and you're done. And this really unleashes the simplicity and seamlessness and allows to bring a lot more users into the application.
In that, you talked about in terms of the 10-second user experience, where people build applications to deliver that 10-second experience. What point can the machine learning be pointed at a form and say, these are the mandatory fields on the form, and the ML then know that it needs to create those 10-second experiences if those mandatory fields aren't filled in? Are we getting close to that now? Is that what ERPX can do, or is that on the roadmap?
It is an evolution, Steve. Users need to get comfortable that ML does the right work for them. So the typical sequence is we'll look at how machine learning can automate something, but sometimes we start with not necessarily automating it, but almost automating it in the sense where we do all this hard work, but we present the final decision to the user and say, hey, here's what you should do, yes or no. And user would look at this and would say, okay, or no, something needs to be corrected. By the way, that something needs to be corrected or okay is in itself a signal to train the machine learning models so that they get better over time. Then you need to reach two main major thresholds. One, make sure that the machine learning models produce the good results most of the time or a very high threshold of the time, and that the users get comfortable by using these kinds of technologies in their daily lives. This is a little bit of a process. There is sort of technological side to this process, which is training of the models, and there's psychological side of the process, which is training the users in a sense, getting users sort of accustomed and trusting the systems to make decisions for them. And yes, I think for some decisions over time, we see the situation where the models would essentially make these decisions for you with very, 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 very high degree of probability that they would make it the way you would make it. But it's a little bit of a road.
Is that trust easier to gain from different generations?
Probably. Again, from my experience, the biggest element of trust or biggest factor in getting trust is exposing users to the answers that are right over and over and over again. When they see a recommendation, and a recommendation is exactly what they would have done, they see it many, many, many times over. At some point, they say, why am I clicking on this OK button every time? I'd rather just you do it automatically. Maybe more recent generations grew up with some of this recommendation technologies more and trust them more and maybe psychologically do. Overall, that's probably true, but different people are different within different generations, so probably not broad generalization in my experience. The biggest factor is the system actually recommending the right things over and over and over again. And as a user, you develop a habit of just agreeing with it and saying okay to that and gradually deciding that you can allow the system to make decisions on its own.
One of the other things you mentioned earlier about new technologies coming in is around APIs, and APIs have been around for some time. But some APIs are more equal than others. It's not just about having an API. It's about what those APIs support. And what does ERPX support in terms of APIs?
We designed this system with the view that over time, we will consume more and more specialized API services from third parties. Because ultimately, that's the way to deliver this, what we call right for your business experience. Because there's so many specialized API services that have evolved over the last 5 to 10 years and continue evolving at an accelerating pace. Whether it's services that provide very specific functionality in a particular industry or very specific functionality in a particular country, as we're thinking about how to design the system, we wanted to be able to ingest these services very, very easily into our ERPX. To make this thing work, we actually did very similar thing to our own functionality, where we broke it into this very specific, smaller, discrete units exposed to the APIs. As we developed the functionality, customer-facing, user-facing functionality with our own system, we consume both pieces of functionality that we developed and we exposed through the APIs, and pieces of functionality that third parties developed, we also consume through the APIs. APIs is a fundamental principle of how we design the system. And again, we don't differentiate between APIs that we created and APIs that third-party vendors provide. And then we created a mechanism about how to assemble the application from our APIs and third-party APIs. That's really, really, really core to how our system is designed and to what makes it so flexible and adaptable and evolvable in time. Because again, this new APIs appear, and we could just, in the matter of minutes, plug them in and deliver immediately functionality to the users in the system. Or if there's a better provider or a different version of something that, again, evolves over time, it doesn't require us to recode the whole system to just include this. Through this, as I mentioned, low-code, no-code tool, we're able to just plug it in very easily, again, in the matter of sometimes, you know, minutes or hours, and be able to take advantage of that.
Is it that simple, or do you have to make sure you map the processes at either end properly?
Well, it differs. Of course, it differs depending on the process. There's some things that are very simple. We showed some examples, for instance, doing a credit check in a particular country where a bureau in the country might be maintaining a list of companies that may be having some financial problems, and lists may be very, very different for different countries and evolve. Ability to sort of call this API, run the company against this list, get the result back, and do something based on that. Hooking up something like this would be just a matter of minutes. Very, very easy. Of course, in real world, for something more sophisticated, more complicated, that traverses different parts of the application, different processes, or maybe connects third-party systems with your APX, that might be something more evolved. It might take days or longer. But nonetheless, again, the core thing here is that we assume that our functionality is exposed to the APIs, and we use this visual no-code tool to say, take data from here, do something with this, then put it over there, wait for a response, and based on the response, do something else here. And all of this logic can be expressed without writing computer code. And that's what makes it so simple.
ERPX is obviously pushing the boundaries of UX with the integration to Slack, the 10-second experiences. What's next for UX? Where do you think the future lies?
The key things that we're doing, again, we're just really starting on, and that is breaking experiences into these components that are different for different users. I think that's a very important principle. Pushing experience towards where users live already, whether it's Slack or Teams or Outlook or whatever other applications, not requiring them to come into this heavier ERP system, but instead of asking users to come into the system, pushing the system to the edge, to the user, to where they are already. And then as much as we can, and not everything is possible, but many of those things are possible, sometimes the best UI is no UI at all, and that's where machine learning and automation comes in play. Where so much of the work that people do currently in some of these more traditional systems can just be done automatically. If you observe the patterns of how people use the systems, you can essentially do a lot of the work, particularly the manual work, the typing work that they do, you could do it automatically.
Where else is machine learning being applied with the ERPX, or where do you hope to push it in the future?
Finding patterns in data is another big area we're looking. For instance, finding fraud or in financial system or different anomalies, which may indicate fraud or may just indicate mistakes that people made as they're, I don't know, submitting time and expense data. By observing data over time, you could figure out whether something is not a likely type of a transaction and whether it indicates fraud or somebody just typed an extra zero as they're submitting an expense report, alerting the system that is probably not a likely occurrence and maybe needs to be looked at by somebody or maybe corrected or sent back to the user automatically to look at inputting again. Things like that. Machine learning is a great application for those kind of problems.
What are the other technologies you're considering introducing into ERPX?
These are the main things that I covered. Being obviously fully cloud-based, microservices and APIs, the low-code, no-code tools to connect different pieces of the application, and to connect to the third-party applications as well. Machine learning, self-composing or instance UIs, obviously mobile, that's basically the main set of technologies that we're using right now.
What about blockchain, AR / VR, and voice interaction?
Voice is a natural continuation of the work we're doing in digital assistant. Right now, it's primarily around typing-oriented, but it involves a similar set of technologies around natural language processing and natural language understanding. and applying voice to that is a natural step after that. With blockchain and AR, we're experimenting to see where to take that. I can't say that at the moment we have something that specifically uses this technology in the current system. Same for AR and VR. We have some experiments that we're doing in this, but it's not in the core of the system at the moment.
On the voice interaction piece, there are some barriers, I think, to full deployment of voice interaction. What do you see those as? Because I'm not sure they're within your control necessarily.
There are a number of things. Obviously, one of the important ones is being security. You, particularly for enterprise systems, you want to make sure that the person who is doing things in the system or executing transactions in the system is authorized to do this. The typical way of dealing within the applications is that you essentially have an application login of some sort, whether the ERP application or some other application that links to the ERP and is authorized to do things in the ERP. When you start doing it with voice, things change a little bit. That's where using different technologies around recognizing who you are and training the system to recognize your voice and so on becomes a whole other set of factors that need to be solved with this sort of enterprise world. In addition to just being able to understand all the commands, understand the specific shortcuts that the enterprise systems might use to express particular things that may not be necessarily part of a regular language, the way humans talk to humans, creating a way to understand these commands and reliably execute these commands based on voice. That's one of the challenges that needs to be resolved. Separately, it's also a question of what are the right devices through which voice interactions would work or not work. If you look at consumer world, the devices that where this interaction took off were so specialized purpose-built devices like Alexa or Google Home or whatnot, as opposed to necessarily, for instance, phones. Phones still remain to a large degree type of devices, although that's changing as well. But the specialized devices that were built for the purposes of voice interactions, things like that took off. Now, those devices at the moment don't necessarily exist to the same degree in enterprise settings, but there may be some opportunity there as well.
But on that voice interaction, do you think the rise of remote working will actually accelerate the use of voice interaction within the corporate world? Because obviously you're not sitting in an office any longer with 20 other people in the room, so you have less crossover noise. And actually you can talk to your machine, you can talk to your bot as well. So it's faster to talk to a bot than it is to type to a bot, especially for some people.
Yeah, very, very possible. There's many memes and jokes about people sitting in an office and talking to the computer around other people and how that's not necessarily the best answer always. And you're right. I think in the remote world where that maybe social stigma of just talking to yourself doesn't apply anymore and this voice becomes a more efficient way of interacting with the system, that could take off. And it's a little bit hard to predict. A lot of these things, ultimately, you have to experiment with and see what users like or not like or how they want to work or not work. Because ultimately, we're dealing here with the change in habits, change in way people work. And that's always a field of experimentation. It's hard to predict exactly how humans work, whether we'll be willing to change your habits or whether it'll stick to the old habits. But definitely something we want to look at.
Dimitri, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. That was a pleasure. And thank you for these very stimulating questions.